Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by John Murphy, who's serving as our worship associate, our director of religious education, Karen Lapidus, our music director, Hal Walker, and the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Choir. There are a few items that I'd like to bring to your attention. We are grateful to have a special musical guest this morning, and Hal Walker will introduce her.
Yes, I'm so pleased that we have a cellist with us today. Her name is Samantha Sinai, and she is a music therapist, and unfortunately she's going off to graduate school to get a master's in performance this summer, but we're so glad to have her here today. Thanks, Samantha.
Ralph Waldo Emerson once wrote, "Never lose an opportunity of seeing anything that is beautiful, for beauty is God's handwriting, a wayside sacrament." We light our chalice this morning in gratitude and celebration of the beauty of life.
Are you symmetrical? I know this sounds like a silly question, but do you at least consider yourself to be symmetrical? What does all this have to do with the ethic of beauty? Well, let me tell you a little story. Many of you know that I participate in our community theater in Talmadge, and that I've been fortunate to get some great parts. Now, being on stage is pretty easy if you know your lines. It's the audition that's nerve-wracking, especially if there's a juicy lead available. Now, the men and I have a running joke at Talmadge. Go ahead and try out for a lead. But as soon as Tom Cerner shows up, see, there's a great sidekick part available. See, I wanted to be Daddy Warbucks and Annie, but they gave that part to Tom. Tom was fantastic, by the way. But you see, Tom is tall, good-looking, has great hair, and a better-than-average singing voice. Let me quote from a December 2007 article in The Economist magazine. "The godfather of scientific study of beauty is Randy Thornhill of the University of New Mexico. It was Dr. Thornhill who, a little over a decade ago, took an observation he originally made about insects and dared to apply it to people. The insects in question were scorpion flies, and the observation was that those flies whose wings were most symmetrical were the ones that did best in the mating stakes. Dr. Thornhill thought this preference for symmetry might turn out to be universal in the animal kingdom, and it does indeed seem to be. In particular, he showed it is true of people. He started with faces, manipulating pictures to make them more and less symmetrical, and having volunteers of the opposite sex rank them for attractiveness." Tom Cerner is symmetrical. Now, I consider myself to be symmetrical as well, but only on one plane. Tom is great viewed from all planes. You see Tom, Daddy Warbucks. Me, Bert Healy. Tom, Curly in Oklahoma. Me, Ali Hakim. Now, Tom just tried out for the leads in the Addams Family in Talmadge, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be a great Gomez. Tom and I both tried out for the lead in Willy Wonka. And you know who got the part? Actually, I did. In all seriousness, there's a lot of discrimination in this world based on beauty. Studies show that better-looking people can generally get jobs easier than those who are not, earn more money, and have better opportunities for advancement. Other people have to work harder to get their foot in the door and then have to constantly prove their mettle to advance. But the most important thing is that you have to keep trying. I never would have won that part of Willy Wonka, but at least I didn't go out and try. And in the end, you can't get the part if you don't audition for it. Come, let us worship together.
This morning, our time for all ages is titled, "How Do You Experience Beauty?" When Reverend Melissa and I were planning what the time for all ages would be this morning, we considered why beauty matters. Why do we care about beauty, beautiful images or music or language? What are the benefits of beauty? One thing that we agreed upon is that experiencing beauty makes us feel something. I might not be able to say why something is beautiful, but I know how it makes me feel. I happen to admire the beauty in the architecture and design of Frank Lloyd Wright. And often when I feel the need to become more centered and calm, I'll page through this wonderful collection of many of his works. And I find afterward that I feel uplifted and inspired. The beauty seems to have a physical effect on me.
To lead us into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer, some words from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who said, "The most beautiful people we have known are those who have known defeat, known suffering, known struggle, known loss, and have found the way out of the depths. These persons have an appreciation, a sensitivity, and an understanding that fills them with compassion, gentleness, and a deep loving concern. Beautiful people do not just happen." Words to introduce a little video I'd like to share with you this morning to lead us into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer. Each time we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. We take time to memorialize those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care those who need our love and support. We gather this morning mindful of this Memorial Day weekend and come here today with hearts ready to remember, to honor those who lost their lives in the service of this country, and to recognize that some of us have personal griefs around those losses. We were not prepared this day to come grieving yet another terrible shooting. And so we have heavy hearts, and we extend our thoughts and prayers to the families of those who lost loved ones in the shooting in California yesterday. And we pray that somehow, some way, we might yet find our way to peace. And I invite you to join with me now in the spirit of prayer with this prayer, Memorial Day prayer, from my colleague Barbara Peskin. Spirit of life, whom we have called by many names in thanksgiving and anguish, bless the poets and those who mourn. Send peace for the soldiers who do not make the wars, but whose lives were consumed by them. Let strong trees grow above graves far from home. Breathe through the arms of their branches. The earth will swallow your tears while the dead sing, "No more. Never again, remember me." For the wounded ones and those who receive them back, there let there be some remedy when the memories come, when the scars pull and the buried metal moves, and forgiveness for those of us who were not there for our ignorance. And in us, veterans in a forest of 1,000 fallen promises, let new leaves of protest grow on our stumps. Give us courage to answer the cry of humanity's pain, and with our bare hands and our full hearts, with all of our intelligence, let us create the peace. Amen.
The human soul is hungry for beauty. We seek it everywhere, in landscape, music, art, clothes, furniture, gardening, companionship, love, religion, and in ourselves. No one would desire not to be beautiful. When we experience the beautiful, there is a sense of homecoming. Some of our most wonderful memories are of beautiful places where we felt immediately at home. We feel most alive in the presence of the beautiful, for it meets the needs of the soul. For a while, the strains of struggle and endurance are relieved, and our frailty is illuminated by a different light in which we come to glimpse, behind the shutter of appearances, the sure form of things. In the experience of beauty, we awaken and surrender in the same act. Beauty brings a sense of completion and sureness. Without any of the usual calculation, we can slip into the beautiful with the same ease as we slip into the seamless embrace of water. Something ancient within us already trusts that this embrace will hold us. These times are riven with anxiety and uncertainty, given the current global crisis. Our trust in the future has lost its innocence. We know now that anything can happen, from one minute to the next. The traditional structures of shelter are shaking, their foundations revealed to be no longer stone, but sand. We are suddenly thrown back on ourselves. Politics, religion, and economics, and the institutions of family and community all have become abruptly unsure. At first, it sounds completely naive to suggest that now might be the time to invoke an awakened beauty. Yet that is exactly the claim I am making.
Maybe you can tell from both of those hymns we've sung today that I have been aloft in thoughts of transcendent beauty this week. The words are perfect. The tune... If we just sing them multiple times. So part of the reason that I love working with worship associates so much is that they often bring thoughts, ideas, and experiences that are not on my radar screen. As I told you, I've been aloft in thoughts of transcendent beauty and what that has to do with ethics. So I asked John earlier this week about his thoughts about the relationship to ethics and beauty, and he comes back with this piece about physical beauty. I hadn't even been contemplating that in the slightest. And it brought me back immediately to another chapter of my life. When I was in college, I read the book The Beauty Myth by Naomi Wolf. Her book explores the ways in which women especially, but all people, are harmed by being measured against an unattainable standard of beauty. I responded to her work with the zeal of a revolutionary. I typed up quotes from the book, and I put them on little slips of paper, and everywhere I went on campus, I left them as little messages to be found by others. Having been convicted of the idea that an impossible beauty standard is damaging for women's lives and men and trans people and children's lives too, I felt a need to share the ugly truth. John's call to worship reminds me that there's still a host of privileges afforded to people who most closely reflect our society's ideals of beauty. Several industries make a great deal of profit off the prevailing beauty standard. The idea is that whenever we fall short, there's a product we can purchase to remedy the problem, from dieting plans to muscle-building supplements, from skin bronzing powders to skin lightening creams. There's something afforded for every condition we might imagine to be not quite right. The ethic that comes from this way of understanding is an ethic of judgment, which fuels many billions of dollars of purchases in every single year. If you paid any attention to the Academy Awards this year, then you have been acquainted with a remarkable young woman named Lupita Nyong'o. She won Best Supporting Actress for her role in 12 Years a Slave. A few days before the Academy Awards, she received another award from the Essence Black Women in Hollywood Luncheon. And there she gave a speech. Nyong'o talked about her struggle to identify her own dark skin as beautiful. As a girl, her mother would often respond to her feelings of unworthiness by telling her, "You can't eat beauty." When she was young, she was annoyed by her mother's words, didn't understand what they meant. But now, she says, she understands that her mother's words meant that there is no sustenance in how we look. What is fundamentally beautiful, she says, is compassion for yourself and for those around you. Finding that compassion, she continues, is the deeper work of being beautiful inside. Nyong'o's speech lifts up an important truth. Beyond notions of physical beauty, there are other essential dimensions of beauty worthy of our consideration. Consider beauty as an experience, a feeling, a calling. The ethic that comes from these ways of understanding beauty, I believe, is an ethic of reverence. Unlike an ethic of judgment, which focuses on perceived flaws, an ethic of reverence focuses on obvious blessing. Such an ethic inspires growth, stimulates gratitude, and can even help cultivate our capacities for generosity and compassion. In the introduction to his gracious book on the subject, John O'Donohue writes that our souls are hungry for beauty, and that when we find it, we can't help but surrender to it, for something ancient within us already entrusts that beauty's embrace will hold. Precisely because so much is uncertain and troubling in our world, we need to invoke and awaken beauty, to rededicate ourselves to the pursuit of the beautiful. For without it, he says, our world would be unbearable. History proves his point. The story of urban labor from the mid-1800s to the early 1900s in this country is a story of exploitation and resistance. In just about every industry, workers faced long hours, terrible working conditions, insufficient pay, and maltreatment by their bosses. With new waves of immigrants arriving every day, desperate for food, employers had the advantage, and they didn't hesitate to exploit all of those who worked for them. They would fire anyone who showed the least inclination to complain. Aside from that threat, the fact of long hours, limited resources, and language barriers made it difficult for workers to organize for better conditions. And yet, despite those obstacles, organize they did. There were many strikes throughout the period. One of the most famous took place in 1912 in Lawrence, Massachusetts, in the textile mills. The workers there, many of them recent immigrants and almost half of them women, took the risk of going on strike in protest of a planned pay cut. The energy generated by the strike quickly led them to list their other complaints as well. In addition to a living wage, they wanted to be fully paid for their work, a more humane pace of work, and better treatment from their bosses. The workers took to the streets, some of them carrying signs demanding bread and roses. James Oppenheimer, the poet, wrote a poem which was later set to music inspired by those signs. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses. There's an article in a union publication written many years earlier before the bread and roses strike in New York City, and there's a piece by a man named Ira Stewart, who was a machinist, who spent his whole working life organizing and what precious little free time he had. He explains what that reference to roses means, I think. He says, take the average mechanic employed by a corporation 14 hours a day. His labor commences at 4:30 in the morning and does not cease until 7:30 at night. How many newspapers or books can he read? What time has he to visit or receive visits, to take baths, to write letters, to cultivate flowers, or walk with his family? What will he most enjoy, works of art or rum? Will he go to meeting on Sunday? Does society care whether he is happy or miserable, sick or well, dead or alive? How often are his eyes tempted by the works of art? His home means to him his food and his bed. His life is work. In this essay, Stewart makes clear that there must be more to life than work. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Bodies need food. Roses, poetry, sunlight, painting, starry skies, friendship, the heart needs them all. We live in a time of great freedom. There is no one stopping us in this place from invoking and awakening beauty in our lives. No one except maybe ourselves. This sermon today is for me because I know that there are times when the incessant clamor to accomplish wins out over the quiet invitation of the beautiful. I know that beauty isn't a luxury but a necessity. And yet sometimes I forget to remember what I know. So this sermon is my reminder. Maybe it will be yours too. These days my struggle is busyness, but there have been times when greater struggles have depressed my appreciation of the beautiful. In thinking back to times of grief in my life, I remember struggling with the sense that an open-hearted embrace of beauty might be a betrayal of love's loss. I know that isn't true, and out of the fog, I can see that clearly. In fact, beauty is one of the gifts that still remains, even when it seems that everything else is crumbling around us. If we let it, beauty can help us survive the depths of our own experience. This is how John O'Donohue puts it. Beauty is such an attractive and generous force precisely because it's so close to the fractured side of experience. Beauty is a sister of all that is broken, damaged, stunted, and soiled. Beauty dwells in the place of tender brokenness. His words brought to mind the words of another writer, a young woman named Etty Hellesum, who died in a German concentration camp when she was 29 years old. She wrote throughout her young life diary entries and letters, which were collected and put into a book after her death. Hellesum, in her writings, reveals her sparkling inner life and her quest to find meaning and purpose as the Holocaust drew nearer and nearer. One of the gifts that she retained up until the very end, it seems, is her ability to be uplifted and inspired by beauty. There are many writings in which she lifts up the tiny, subtle bits of beauty that still remained as her world grew smaller and smaller. "I often see visions of poisonous green smoke," she wrote. "I'm with the hungry and the dying and the ill-treated every day. But I'm also with the jasmine and with that piece of blue sky in my window. There's room for everything in a single life." In the face of suffering, she embraced beauty within and also cultivated her ability to reveal the beauty within herself. The very last bit of writing that survives from her is a postcard that she flung out the window of the train as she was headed to Auschwitz. It was found by a farmer and mailed to her friends. The postcard says, "In the end, the departure came without warning, but we left the camp singing." Beauty is an experience. It's a feeling and a calling. If we let it touch our hearts, the beautiful can inspire in us an ethic of reverence, reverence for life and reverence for the majestic beauty that is all around us. In this way, beauty can be a powerful catalyst to growth. Beauty can open and stretch our souls. Beauty can stimulate our will to be generous. Beauty can inspire our will to give service. Having experienced beauty, it's just natural for us to want to share it and protect it so that it will endure. And so, my friends, let this be your invitation to dwell in beauty and find yourself at home. May it be so, and amen. Once each month, we take a special collection for an organization whose work in the world we want to support. Today, our special collection goes to the Countryside Conservancy, an organization whose work is about promoting beauty, beauty in the landscape, in the Cuyahoga Valley National Park, and beauty in the food systems that sustain the lives of all who choose to support their work. All undesignated offerings this morning will go to Countryside Conservancy. Our worship has ended. Let our service begin. Let beauty into your life and let it inspire you to share your gifts with a world in need. Go in peace.